Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Weird World Podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Carrie.
We have no Emma here. She just floats in for part two. Not here for part three. The final part of the Paul Fronczak story is part three, and I've now learned how to pronounce this last name correctly.
Yeah, I'm kind of
proud of myself. Carrie, why don't you give us a little recap of what we learned in part two?
Well, in part two, we started with Paul and his wife having a baby, and that kind of prompting him to try to figure out what his biological origins were, and felt, you know, like his daughter deserves to know too, as much as he does.
Sure.
And also his parents, whether or not they felt they needed to know.
Yeah.
He thought they needed to know, especially if he wasn't their son. So they went on a DNA journey with the help of some search angels and the ancestor DNA people, and they did identify who they believed he was, who his birth family was, through some DNA matches.
Yes.
We have not had a definitive test yet. We have identified possible siblings, Fred and Linda.
Fred and Linda. And so now we have to figure out, is that really his family and where did he come from? What's his origin story before he was found in front of that department store in Atlantic City? And again, to recap part one, I guess, this is the story of this baby kidnapped, found almost 2 years later, supposedly, and raised it by parents that it turns out, even though they claimed he was their child, he was not their child.
Yep.
So then the last question is, where is the real Paul Fronczak?
Correct. And that's where we're going to start today. We talked a little bit about how he's very fond of the paranormal and the X-Files and UFOs and aliens and all that kind of stuff. So after he found out what is possibly his true identity, a twin named Jack Rosenthal with a twin sister named Jill who is missing. So we've got lots of missing people in this story. A friend of his suggested that he talk to a psychic that the friend knew.
Good friend. Great advice.
Well, Paul says he always believed in the paranormal, so he made an appointment to talk to this medium. The medium was based in Long Island. Probably not the Long Island.
Where the worst mediums are?
I have no idea if
there's good one. So, okay.
Probably not.
No, was it that awful human?
He just said that she was in Long Island. So, so they had to have a phone session. So it's pretty interesting that, you know, mediums can do their magic.
Oh, so was it in person?
No, because he's in Las Vegas.
Well, so he had time to do a hot read, and then she did her cold read.
So here's the thing. This psychic, or this medium, is a friend of a friend of his.
Okay.
But suppose he says all she knew was his name.
Well, that's Paul.
That his name was Paul, not his last name. I know.
Paul. You're so naive and easily taken in.
He was hoping to learn something valuable. So we'll just go through this real quick because I know how much you love psychics.
He's all over Google. That would take her 10 minutes less.
Oh, of course.
To find out everything she needed to hot read him.
Okay. You can't Google Paul and find out everything about
this guy. No,
but
she did. No, his last name, obviously.
So she told him he was going through a heavy battle with something to do with the number three.
Okay.
3 years.
Well, maybe she didn't do a hot read then because that's lame.
3 years or three parts to the battle.
Or anything. Just find me a three is basically what that
also, is. Also, that he was connected to a family with three sisters, but one of the sisters is missing. She's a missing person. She also saw four men in uniforms, like military or police, and told him that his father was coming through and he was crying and apologizing and praying. And perhaps this meant he was asking for his son's forgiveness. Okay. She asked him.
Since he's dead, that's unprovable.
She asked him who was adopted, and she said she saw abuse and abandonment, but that the cycle of abuse stops with him. Then she told him he was one of two.
Yeah.
And then, was he a twin? She told him he needed to forgive to move on with his journey, and he needed to go to the water.
The water. They always do water because there's never no place. Unless you're in a desert, there's water nearby.
He's in a desert, obviously.
He's not.
And
Carrie, it can be a bathtub, a sink,
well,
a pipe.
No, because she said he needs to put his feet in the ocean.
Oh, okay.
And that would be a conduit for what? I know not.
Okay.
So that's it. That's what he got from the from the psychic.
That was hugely helpful.
Yeah, not help at all. But so he believes he's Jack. And
remember, that's the shit she threw out that has been recorded and
made
come
it
down
into
to
his
us.
Book,
there's
yes.
undoubtedly other shit that she threw out that was just, they said, well, I don't understand what that means. So you just don't report it.
Yeah. No, I don't believe in psychics, and I just think it's interesting.
They're horrible people.
Yeah. But it's very fitting with his personality, and he believes
no
that.
There's no, you've mentioned that a lot. So there's no, has there, in anything you read, is there any hint that he thinks there's something supernatural, paranormal to do with his kidnapping or his disappearance or whatever his, you know?
No.
And, okay.
No, but, you know, he was fascinated with UFOs and aliens growing up.
I'm honestly surprised he didn't like wonder or put in his book or whatever that he may have been something to do with aliens. Who
no,
knows?
He said as a child he did wonder, am I an alien?
Yeah.
Did they plop me down into this family? Yeah. But that was those exactly. were childhood, you know, okay. fantasies, imagination. He didn't
plenty
grow
of
up.
Adults think those things as well.
No, so. I know, but not him. He didn't grow up believing that. So, but so now he's got another mystery to solve. Where is his twin sister, Jill? And he said that people had asked him, you know, once he told them, like, did you ever feel like a twin? Because, you know, twins have a psychic connection and whatever. He said, absolutely not.
Well, that's good. I'm
he never sensed any kind of telepathic connection.
There is something I read about this that said he claimed
did,
to have done that, but it was just probably poorly sourced.
Yeah, he doesn't say that. And this is from his book. So
So
his birth parents, Gilbert and Marie, they were long dead. Gilbert died in 1995 at the age of 61 from cancer. And then Marie died in 97, also 61, and also of cancer, I believe.
Hmm. You said 91 for the father. He was 61?
He 95 at 61.
95? Mm-hmm. Oh, in 1961.
Yeah, in 1995 at the age of 61.
Oh,
and Marie died in 1997, and she was also 61. She was a couple years younger than him.
Okay.
So Gilbert was buried. Well, he had been in the military. He had actually been in the Korean War. Mm. So he was buried in a veteran cemetery, and he was also a sheriff's officer in Atlantic City. So those kinds of things were on his headstone or whatever. Still, his burning questions are, why did they abandon him, and what did they do with his sister, Jill?
So they've proven, beyond a shadow of doubt, that Gilbert and
Marie
were his biological parents for sure.
No.
Oh.
This is just, this is the family that they're pretty sure he's from. They need to get, to be absolutely sure,
Fred's DNA.
They need to get either Fred or Linda to test.
But we know Linda's not helpful.
Correct.
Okay.
And so far, Fred's not all that helpful either. Hmm. So but he hasn't talked to either of them yet. But so they found Fred and Linda. That's what we're going to talk about next. Mm-hmm. We need one of them to test. Fred shut him down when one of the search angels contacted him. And remember, they had been told that Linda would be difficult. So they didn't even contacted her. So they thought, well, let's look for cousins because, you know, you can check with first cousins. They found his mother's brother, so his uncle, in Kentucky. This man was skeptical, but he confirmed that his sister Marie had twins.
Oh.
He knew about them.
These are the twins no one spoke of that we heard in part two.
Yes. Family members knew
about the twins.
They existed, but it's like...
And then they sort of
disappeared,
weren't there anymore, and you didn't talk about it.
Correct.
And if you did talk about it, Gilbert might kill you.
Yes. So he talked about... Both Gilbert and Marie were really heavy drinkers, and they would, Gilbert would leave. So he had left the family, for 6 months at a time.
Jeez.
And, you know, here she's stuck with all these kids, and she's having a hard time paying their rent and feeding the kids, and she's drinking really heavily. So this is all from her brother. And he said it was a terrible situation, but Gilbert always came back.
Yeah.
So.
Because he's a classy guy in the
end. He connected them to his niece, Melissa, who was nice and willing to talk to them. She also confirmed that the twins had existed.
That'd be their cousin.
Correct.
Okay.
She said.
Presumably Paul's cousin.
Correct. Presumably a first cousin.
And also the cousin, Jack. Okay.
I don't know who her parents are, though, who her dad is. Probably.
We don't need a tree.
Well,
it would just confuse me.
Yeah. yeah, because it's on her side. So, but anyway, she confirmed the twins, but she said Gilbert and Marie didn't raise them. Mm. And that her side of the family, so this is from Marie's side of the family, they were told that somebody on Gilbert's side raised the twins.
Hmm.
That for some reason, Gilbert and Marie figured they couldn't handle five kids.
Yeah.
So they gave them to somebody on Gilbert's side to raise them.
That's interesting.
And she also agreed that she would take a DNA test to try to help confirm. This would confirm Paul's match to his birth mother Marie's side.
I feel like we're going to come back to this idea that Gilbert's family had somehow taken care of mm-hmm. the twins. Okay.
They got his original birth certificate, Paul's or Jack Rosenthal's real mm-hmm. birth certificate. So if indeed he is Jack Rosenthal, his birthday would be October 22nd, 1963.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he had been celebrating
his actual birthday.
April yeah. 1964.
Okay.
And it did have that he was a twin.
Okay.
And his name was Paul Thomas, and his sister was Jill Lynn. So at this point, he hasn't talked to his parents in over 2 years.
Paul Thomas? So was
middle name Paul Thomas Rosenthal.
Yeah. So how do you Jack was a nickname? Would be Jack Thomas Rosenthal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You probably put Paul.
Yeah. Okay. Typo. Sorry.
Typo. Okay.
Good catch, Dean. So at this point, he hasn't talked to his parents in over 2 years. They're mad.
Yeah, that's right.
About everything.
They just contact him to say he's an asshole and hang up.
Yeah. So he hasn't
every day for 2 years. They're vindictive.
He hasn't told them anything about any.
They don't
of this
deserve
stuff.
To know anything at this point.
Well, they do, but they don't want to know. Okay. So I get it that he's not calling them. I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
If I were him, I wouldn't call him until I had information about their son.
And then I call and say, I have information about your son, and I hang up.
It'll cost you $100,000.
Nice. You turned into a greed. Okay, Carrie.
I'm joking. So George Knapp, that KLAS TV reporter that mm-hmm. you have a high level of respect for.
I do. He's a fine journalist.
He wanted to run a story with an update on the case because this is big news.
Yeah. But although, in fairness to him, I think this is at the time he still was. He was
a local
journalist or local television broadcaster, I have to say.
Yeah. So he ran the update. Somebody from the FBI saw it, and they contacted his parents. The FBI.
Paul's parents.
Contacted Paul's parents.
Oh, okay.
To tell him, Paul's not your kid.
Huh.
So at this point, his mother calls him. She apologized for how they raised him.
Oh, how they raised. She went. I thought she was going to apologize for the last 2 years. No, she went all the way back.
Yes. And explained that initially when they were, brought together, they were still having a hard time. It hadn't been that long since their baby was kidnapped. They had a stillborn baby before that. Totally get it. All that kind of stuff. So everything was difficult for them. I understand why they did what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of came back together at this point. So back to Cousin Melissa. She said she had heard the twins were given to someone on Gilbert's mm-hmm. side of the family. But she didn't know the details. She didn't, she would have been very young herself. Other family members had been told by Marie, Paul's possible biological mother, mm-hmm. that the twins were with her mother, Jenny.
Huh.
Family member ran into Jenny. Jenny asked the other family member how the twins were. This family member would have been from Gilbert's side.
And she goes, are you talking about my breast? I don't understand. What do you mean?
And she said, what are you talking about? Yeah. I thought they were with you.
Oh, clever.
Mm-hmm. So
if that's intentional.
They were telling each side of the family the twins were with the other side of the family.
Which does imply intent.
Yes. Everybody's getting a different story out of Gilbert.
Because right, if you
so
say
they're lying. They're
if
lying.
If you tell your family they're with the in-law family, you have no reason to see those people in all mm-hmm. likelihood. So okay.
Yeah.
So you're not going to wonder why the twins are never there.
So all the various family members are starting to realize mm-hmm. they were lied to. And they didn't even want to think about what could have happened to the twins. But they knew that the twins weren't treated well by the parents. So Paul...
Are you going to go into that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Paul speaks to Lynn. She was married to his uncle on his father's side, Leonard. Remember, they talked to her before.
That's right.
And she was shocked that one of the twins was still alive. Mm. She said she'd only seen them a few times, and she remembered seeing burn marks on their arms. And she's the one that spoke to her family doctor about it, saying, you know, my in-laws have these babies, and I think they're being abused. And he told her it was basically none of her business, that she should stay out of it.
Mandatory
reporter didn't exist.
No, but you know what did exist? Human decency.
Correct.
And this guy failed miserably.
A lot of people failed miserably in this case.
A doctor, and they say they were being physically abused, and you say, mind your own business. Yep. You're a piece of shit.
Well, her daughter, Melanie, was a little bit older than the twins, and they talked to her. She said she remembered seeing the twins when she was little. She said they were always screaming and crying, and one time she went into their dark bedroom, and she saw them in wooden cages screaming. And then she said the next time they went back, the twins were gone. So the way I picture the wooden cages are like, back in those days, playpens were wooden.
Yeah.
So they put it upside down.
Makeshift. Oh, you're right. Or they could have put a makeshift structure atop of it to not let could get out. They would have been, it depends on their age, right? It would have been, I mean,
they were babies.
Yeah, they were babies, so they probably wouldn't have got it, but they're just being.
Yeah.
In case they made a break, in case they tried to Shawshank it.
Well, I mean.
Why would they put.
Year old, 18 month old babies can crawl out of their cribs.
Okay.
So, So her dad told her that he thought they had killed the twins and buried them.
Wow.
And told her, don't ever mention them again.
It's our family murder. It's our family child murders.
Well, he said it would start a family war.
Yeah. Guess what's worth a family war? Infanticide.
She was five. And
No. I mean the father.
No. I know. Okay. But I'm telling you, he's telling her this at five. And this is Leonard. Mm-hmm. So she said that they thought the twins were, and I'm not going to use it, but it's the R word. So some sort of.
Which is something that.
Developmental.
Gilbert.
Impairment.
And.
Marie.
Marie had said.
Yeah.
Had claimed.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, if it was Paul, that's not true.
Correct. Paul said he tried.
Although he does go on coast to coast. So, you know what? No, never mind.
And he's a big fan of Rush, too.
Hey, that's the point in his favor.
Paul said he tried to summon, you know, very old childhood memories of being abused, but he just couldn't. He would have been too young.
I mean, you don't have memories roughly before the age of three. No. So it's not, you can't summon them.
No.
You can imagine them, and many people do. But you can't summon them.
No.
Because they don't exist.
Yes. Melanie told Paul that she believed them leaving him out in front of that store was the best thing that could have ever happened to him.
Yeah.
That his family was terrible.
I wonder, though, who left him in front of that department store. My guess, I'm not convinced that it was his parents.
Yeah. So Paul does some research, and he finds some newspaper articles about his Rosenthal grandparents, Harry and Bertha. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of turmoil and bad stuff. There are suicide attempts, arrests, because back in those days, you were arrested after you tried to commit suicide. Yeah, Bertha. When she was released from the hospital, the cops were out waiting for her outside the hospital, and they arrested her.
For attempted murder of yourself.
Yeah. Isn't that horrifying?
That's very strange. Although, wasn't it the death penalty for a while in England? Like in
I don't know.
1800s?
Jesus.
I think it was. Clever.
Non-payment of child support. Harry, the grandfather, disappearing and leaving the family destitute. Mm. And then his grandmother and his father and uncle then getting evicted. The kids, Gilbert and Leonard, showing signs of malnutrition. Mm. And all this is in newspaper articles.
Wow.
Because then in the articles, Bertha is like basically begging for help or hoping her husband Harry will see this and come back. And I guess apparently Harry had left because of a $1,500 debt that he couldn't pay to probably some unsavory kinds of people.
It's actually a pretty good reason to leave.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's reading about all this kind of stuff, and this is how his birth father if Gilbert is his birth father, this was his childhood.
He repeated the process.
Yes, and it was terrible. So actually, the psychic was right.
Well, after Googling Paul Fronczak, whose name she for sure knew.
So he's not sure what happens after that. Obviously, not everything is documented in newspaper articles, but clearly they didn't starve. And apparently, Bertha got remarried. So she married somebody else. So around this time, Paul reaches...
Bertha is the real hero of this story, I feel like.
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe not.
So Paul reached out to his younger brother, Fred. Mm. Fred was confused. He thought when he was contacted by the search angel people that it was a scam. He didn't think any of it was true. So when Paul contacted him, he said, you know, did you know your parents had some twins? Yeah. You know, you knew you had two sisters, but you also had another brother and another sister.
But he's younger, isn't he?
He's younger.
Okay. So he would not have had that memory.
Correct. And he said he had no idea that there were any other kids. So
that's plausible from him. It would be less plausible coming from Linda.
Yes.
And his older brother.
Well, Linda was born in 1961.
So she would have been, she would have been like, she
was a small child.
Four and five. And five and a half or almost six by time they disappeared-ish. So that's enough to have, for sure, memories. She would have been... They disappeared in
65? 64. What was it? 65.
He was born in 64.
It was 65.
Like 18 months.
No, he was born in 63.
Oh, okay.
So, he was abandoned in 65.
Okay, so four-ish.
So she would have been four.
Okay.
So that's pretty young.
Yeah.
It's plausible.
Okay.
I mean, it would be weird.
That you don't remember your siblings?
Yeah.
Your twins, siblings?
But not impossible. Absolutely not impossible. And Karen, the sister who has already passed away by now, she was younger. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Fred was about 5 months old when Paul was abandoned. So he was born, but obviously he was an infant.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what this means is that the family really did never speak about them.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, that's right. Because they would have, like, what now? You want to know about my twins? My twin siblings? What do you know?
Yeah. So Paul gave him his name so Fred could Google him and read, you know,
like
about
the psychic. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, well, he wanted Fred to see that he was a real person, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Fred could look and see what Paul looked like. He said he didn't think they looked anything alike at all. And, Paul said, you know, we did do a DNA test with a cousin, so we're still waiting for those results. Mm. But he did send Fred a copy of the article that announced the birth of the twins, because Fred was even skeptical about that. Like, my parents never had twins. Well, here's actual proof that they did have twins. Yeah. They just never told you about them. So Fred sent Paul a photo that he had that was dated 3 months before the twins would have been born. And this was his way of saying, see, this is a picture of my mom and she wasn't pregnant. He was saying his mother didn't look pregnant. It was just too hard to tell.
Yeah.
He didn't think she was pregnant because he didn't think she had twins.
And he didn't want her, because you're saying terrible things about your mother, so who somehow got rid of twin siblings.
So when Paul got a copy of the official birth certificate for the twins, he sent copies of them to Fred so that Fred could see those, because it's got the parents' names on there. Fred contacted him and said he was sorry. He said he felt sick about what his parents had done. And, you know, now he believes it because he's been given all this proof. And he really wanted to know what happened to Jill.
Yeah.
Paul was hopeful, by Fred's kind of about face, that they could actually have a good relationship with his brother, because he didn't really have a great relationship with his other brother, Dave. Mm-hmm. So then Paul wants to contact his Uncle Leonard, the one that everybody says is kind of mean. His daughter, Melanie, the one that was helping them, said her dad told her it would start a war.
Mm-hmm.
She told him that her father, Leonard, was evil. Mm. And that she had a very abusive childhood, and if she never saw him again, it would be too soon. So
Leonard would have been someone who, I don't know, was supportive of them getting rid of the twins, potentially.
Theoretically. Her mother, who was Leonard's wife, they said that Gilbert, was not as bad as Leonard, but that Gilbert still wasn't great.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he did abandon his family for significant lengths of time. Gilbert.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And they told him that Leonard went to live with Gilbert after his wife divorced him and kicked him out. And so Paul thought, oh, well, maybe he did have something to do with it. If he was this horrible person, maybe my parents weren't so horrible. Oh, you know, it was Uncle Leonard
stole
who
the
did
twins
it.
And put one of them in front of a department store that within a nice outfit. Who knows? Likely.
There were a whole lot of people, middle-aged men with suspicious adoption stories coming out of the woodwork, contacting the FBI, thinking they were the real Paul. Because remember, the FBI had announced they were reopening the Paul Fronczak kidnapping case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one by one, the FBI is ruling them out with DNA tests. So they're not really making any progress on that end of it. And Paul is kind of out of it because, according to the FBI, he isn't really a party to that,
not to that
crime one. Anymore. No. Huh. Right. So he actually does get to see his parents again and his dad, because his dad is kind of sick now and his dad is starting with dementia. So he goes to visit them. And during the visit, his mom takes out a photo album and shows us this is something he has never seen before in his entire life. And they are pictures that the Eckerts from the adoption home had given. So Claire made a whole photo album for Adora and Chester of Paul, bunch of pictures. Yeah. They had purposely taken a bunch of photos of just Paul, you know, because you can't have the other kids in the photos for, I guess, for privacy reasons or whatever. So
so Claire is the hero of the story for
sure. She was a wonderful person. And so his mom also gave him some letters that Claire Eckert had written to her describing the kind of baby he was and like the things he liked to do, what his day was like, the kind of stuff he liked. At that young age, he really liked music. And so his mom said, you know, they really loved you. And so she gave him all of this stuff, which was kind of nice. She said that she felt pressure when they went to New Jersey to see him. And she wasn't really completely sure.
Yeah.
She wanted him to be Paul, obviously.
For sure.
And this is
so she said she felt pressure from who? The New Jersey law enforcement or something? Who
would probably have been everybody.
Cuz my understanding is that some of the folks with New Jersey whatever Children's Services didn't believe that they were the parents and were not.
No, they didn't.
Okay. Yeah. So they wouldn't have put pressure on her for that. So I'm not sure who would have put pressure on her for that.
But I don't think they told the Fronczaks that. They thought we have a kidnapped baby.
Yeah.
We have an abandoned baby.
Yeah.
This solves everybody's problems. This baby gets a good home.
Yeah, for sure.
And these parents get a baby.
Okay.
So I think that's what their motivation was.
Okay.
More so than making 100% sure, because back in those days there was no way to make 100% sure.
Yeah.
But she said she thought they would be judged if they had said no and didn't take him. And that by taking them, if he really wasn't theirs, they're saving a baby who was abandoned by somebody, right?
But we now know, I supposedly in hindsight, I imagine that Claire and her husband were going to adopt him.
Yes.
So he wasn't really going to be abandoned.
No, he probably would have had a wonderful life. But they didn't know that. The Fronczaks didn't know that.
Yeah.
They weren't told. They were not allowed to meet Claire and Fred.
Okay.
So they never actually saw them. And she talked about how guilty she felt for handing her baby over to the fake nurse.
Yeah.
Like it was somehow her fault. She had no way of knowing. So finally, this is like the first good long conversation they have about everything. And, you know, he's happy because now they can kind of understand each other a little bit better. And then when he leaves her, he tells her that he's still going to try to find her real son.
Okay.
At this point, he still hasn't talked to his brother Dave. It's been over 2 years when Dave changed his mind and refused to take the DNA test.
Well, his brother Dave, in fairness, still has a bald patch in his hair where Paul ripped it out. So,
and he doesn't call his brother to say, hey, guess what? My real name's Jack. So presumably his mom is going to tell him, but he and Dave are not on friendly terms. So he has more conversations with Fred now that Fred believes him. And Fred says that their family was dysfunctional, that they didn't ever sit around and play games or, you know, eat dinner together. He said they did. They kind of had money. They weren't super poor.
Because he was a sheriff's deputy or something like that by this point? Okay.
Yep. He said they took...
He wasn't at the time of when Jack and Jill disappeared, though. I don't think.
I don't know what he was.
I don't think he was,
to be
honest, a cop yet.
Fred said they took vacations and like he and his dad would go to Phillies games and stuff like that. Mm. He said, but they were never enjoyable. Mm. Like nothing was ever fun.
Well, Phillies, I mean, just kid in Philadelphia.
And he said they had things, but they didn't have love. Mm. So that's really sad. In 2015, Paul travels to the East Coast to meet some of these various family members who had helped him. He goes to meet Linda. He decides he's going to contact her, even though everybody says how difficult she is. And he said it went kind of well. She was a little bit quiet and reserved. She described their family, and it was pretty horrible. He really felt sorry for her because she had to live in that family her whole life while he, under horrible circumstances.
Yeah,
but
well,
he didn't have to live with that bad family his whole life. She said nobody liked their father, Gilbert. Nobody went to his funeral. Huh. That their mother was glad when he died. They were, apparently were still married. They stayed married the whole time. And she said she didn't have any contact with Fred anymore.
Hmm.
So when he left, they planned to go to lunch the next day. And then he goes back to his hotel room. He gets a message from Fred that Fred didn't want to meet with him because he was supposed to meet with Fred too. He didn't believe they were really family. But even if they were, he would feel the same way.
Hmm.
He wouldn't want to get together. And so then Paul's all like, okay, whatever, Fred.
Wow.
And then he calls Linda to say what time they're going to go get lunch because he's going to take Linda and her daughter to lunch. She doesn't answer the phone.
Mm. Mm.
So he thinks, well, at least he reunited Linda and Fred because they probably talked to each other.
I don't understand Fred's attitude. I can kind of understand. I can understand Linda's attitude more if she did remember her twins, siblings.
Yeah.
In which case, she must feel an unfair, but a certain amount of guilt because she knew what was going on with them for the first horrific 18 months of their lives.
I mean, she certainly should have no guilt about that.
No, for sure not. But you can see how she could.
And
that they were, you know, they. She probably never knew in her life that what if she did remember the twins and suddenly they disappeared, she had to have assumed the worst.
Yes.
Right? Not that they were left in a department store.
100%.
She would have assumed they were killed.
And what Paul assumes, and I kind of agree with him, is that they were both afraid of this dark family secret because now they know about it, whether Linda knew about it before or not, she knows about it now. And it's a horrible thing. It makes their family look like horrible people.
Yeah.
And because his story has been so public, their family is going to be made public about how horrible they were.
Well,
he thinks.
You can counter that by being not horrible.
Correct.
And being not horrible would have been to reconcile with
them. You can go be interviewed by George Knapp and Barbara Walters and say yes.
Yeah.
So he wants to talk to Uncle Leonard.
Mm, that's risky.
It is risky, but Paul takes risks. So he thinks Leonard probably knows, right? Because Leonard went to live with Gilbert
for
and Murray.
For sure that was when the twins were still in the house. That could have been after.
Mm.
But I mean, I imagine the memory is not pristine in terms
exactly.
of the timing.
Yeah,
so it could have been after the twins were gone.
So, but he thinks if Leonard wasn't responsible for it, Leonard knows. Which is probably a safe assumption. He didn't think that after all he'd heard about his parents that they would have killed Jill, even accidentally. I don't know why he thinks that.
Yeah.
I think this is a little delusional.
When we hear about a story, a part of the world of his childhood as told by his babysitter, you're going to realize it's very rational to think they could have killed Jill.
Even the cousin saying she saw burn marks on their arms and them in wooden cages. Yeah. I mean, that's bad, too.
They were abused.
And they were always screaming. So he hires a private detective because all the family members say, we have no idea where Leonard is. He's been missing for years. So he hires a private detective to look for Leonard. And this private detective seems to find him. He's kind of... You know, he doesn't have a permanent address. He's, doesn't have a job.
Is he in Kentucky?
No, he's in New Jersey, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, Kentucky is the mom's side.
Okay,
that's Murray's side.
So he's New Jersey. Okay.
Uncle Leonard is his father's mm-hmm. brother. So he seems like, it almost seems like he knows somebody's looking for him. He's kind of one step ahead of this private detective because he's going, like, you know, staying at hotel motels and, you know, stuff like that. And no family members are helpful. Nobody's in contact with him. No one knows where he is. Finally, the detective calls Paul one day and says, I found him. He's in the hospital.
Oh.
In fact, he was in the same hospital where Jack and Jill were born in Atlantic City. So Paul flies out to see him, and he has to tell the hospital staff that he's his nephew, which is true, but it's like he can't prove it.
Yeah.
But who can?
Yeah.
I can't prove I'm my uncle's niece either. At first, when he goes into Leonard's room, and Leonard thinks he's Fred because he says, like, hi, Leonard, I'm your nephew.
Okay.
And then he explains, no, I'm Jack. I'm one of the twins. And he said, Leonard seemed kind of confused. He's old.
Yeah.
I think he's in his 70s, mid to upper 70s. And he's, you know, clearly on some sort of medication. But he knew who Jack was. He knew who he was talking about. He knew who the twins were. And he was surprised. And he was kind of happy to see him.
He didn't say, I thought I killed you.
No.
Okay.
So Paul is there. Obviously, he wants to get information about the twins.
Think he was a ghost?
No. So he's kind of just talking about stuff, beating around the bush. And it doesn't really seem like Leonard knows what happened to the twins. In their talk, Leonard portrays himself as the nice guy who would have raised the twins himself if Gilbert and Marie would have given him them. He told Paul a story about how one weekend he and his parents and Marie's parents went to visit Marie. Mm-hmm. I don't know where Gilbert was. Mm-hmm. Unplanned. So Marie wasn't expecting them, which honestly, I'd be pissed off if I had a bunch of kids and my parents and in-laws, people just showed up out of the blue, but whatever. So when they get there, they ask to see the twins, and Marie says they're upstairs. Yeah. And they said, well, you know, can you bring them down? We want to see them. So Marie, you know, probably huffs and puffs upstairs, pissed off. She walks down the stairs holding each twin in, you know, one twin in one hand, one twin in the other hand, by their wrist.
They're just hanging.
Yeah, and he said, like, you would hold a dead chicken by the neck is how she's carrying these twins. And then when she gets to the bottom of the stairs, she drops them and just says, here they are. And Leonard said the boy was naked, stands up, and runs over to him grabs him by the leg and just, like, won't let go. So this tells you they're at least a year-ish old, right?
Or
a little bit more because at least Jack was walking. And then when Paul asked him, what about the little girl? Leonard said he couldn't really remember anything about the little girl. So other than she got carried downstairs and dropped. So that's kind of all he gets out of Leonard. And because Leonard is saying things, you know, like they're the nurses trying to kill me and, you know, the typical.
So Leonard's paranoid.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So they kind of thought he was going to die, but I don't think whatever was wrong with him, it wasn't that big of a deal. So he thinks, okay, maybe what happened is Jill was accidentally killed.
Yeah.
And
they had to get rid of me.
And they had to get rid of me. Why? I don't.
Well.
Why?
It's easier to explain. We gave the twins to be raised by someone else than we gave one of a twin set to be raised. That is kind of weird. Maybe that's why.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The whole thing is weird. But so he thinks, okay, then maybe they buried something in the yard of the house they were living at. So he hires a company with ground penetrating radar to check the yard of the family's old house. He tells them he's looking for old family heirlooms. He doesn't tell them the truth.
I'm looking for a body, a skeleton, a small one.
When the guy was actually there doing the work, he tells him the whole story, and he does tell him that he's looking for the remains of a small child. And the guy doing the penetrating radar flags a spot, and he said, this could, because it, I guess the radar does disruptions in the soil and something like that.
It does hollowness and it can't go very deep though. So
yeah, so they find a spot that he says possibly could have human remains. So later he contacts the owner of the lot to get permission to dig in this spot. And it's been a while. I think it's been several weeks. And because when they get there, like the X that they marked the spot with or whatever is gone or whatever. So he doesn't want it to look like a big production. So he thinks, I'm just going to fly there, go to Home Depot, get some shovels, go do it himself, which is a little delusional. That would be difficult. But across the street from where he is, there's like a construction crew taking a break. And so he goes over and says, hey, you know, so any of you want to make a little money helping me? I need to dig a hole over here.
Jeez.
And so one guy says, yeah, I'll come do it. So it took him. So this guy said, I have an hour to do this. So they dig a hole 6 feet by 4 feet and then 6 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
And they get down because this is in Atlantic City. So they get down so far that water is seeping in, salt water is seeping in. And they're finding things like little shards of, you know, dinner plates and stuff like that. And so, but finally, when they get down to where the salt water is seeping in, they do find some bones. Hmm. So he just like puts them in a bag and he takes them to, you know, he Googles forensic anthropologists in Atlantic City. And he finds
bones.
He takes the bones to this forensic anthropologist who identifies them as animal bones. And this guy tells him that a two-year-old's bones would probably have already just become dust after 50 years. He said they aren't like adult bones.
They're pretty,
I guess, they
not
would
hollow, not. But, you know, they're just not as sturdy.
Yeah, they're not as hardened and developed as, you know, an adult's bones are. So,
if anything, though, that's kind of a good outcome. At least it gives the potential that Jill is still alive.
So he gets a call from a woman named Susan. She says she was an old neighbor of his family in Atlantic City. And they actually they meet face to face. And she tells him that she had babysat for his sisters. His mom had asked her to babysit for her two little girls. And so when she gets there, the mom says, you know, Linda and Karen. They're allowed to have whatever they want to eat. And, oh, and don't worry about the twins. They're upstairs.
Yeah. Like last second.
Yeah.
Like, do this. Here's when Linda and Karen get food. We're leaving. Bye. Oh, and by the way, there's twins are upstairs. Leave them alone.
And
can you imagine that?
I mean,
she's insane. Wait, what? Twins? So there's four kids and there's twins upstairs and they're not, and you know, clearly he's like, don't just leave them upstairs and ignore them.
And so she goes upstairs, she finds the twins' bedroom, and she said it's like pitch dark.
Yeah.
There's no light in the room and it's very smelly and it's very dirty. And she says Jack has a black eye. She says the crib sheets were filthy and stained with urine. And
they're in cribs, are not cages?
Cribs.
Okay.
Yep. They hadn't been changed. You know, they were filthy, dirty. They had bottles of curdled milk. She said it was just absolutely disgusting. And she said they just didn't react to her like normal babies would.
Their entire life, they've probably been ignored and abused.
She said she picked up Jill and it was like, no, even like relief. Like, oh, this nice person has me. And she was 14 years old at the time.
The girl,
Susan.
Does she do estimate of how old the kid? The kids were probably what, a year and a half at this point, something like that.
Well, fact that Jack had a black eye, this leads me to think that this is probably shortly before they were abandoned,
because he had a residual discoloration of the baby in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry, in Newark.
Yes, and I'll tell you what I think in a minute. Okay. But so she said the parents stayed out all night, and she actually cleaned up the babies, you know, washed all of their stuff, gave them fresh milk or whatever, fed them, and stayed with them all night. In fact, this wasn't in the book or anything, but you told me that she called her sister
to help.
Yeah.
And so our sister watched the two kids that were not horrifically abused in a dark room.
She cleaned up the
mm-hmm. the twins and watched them.
Yeah.
And stayed with them.
So when the parents got home the next morning, so they were out all night. I don't know if it was planned.
It was planned.
Oh, it was planned?
I read said, yeah, it's planned. She knew she was being hired for the whole night.
Yeah. Which is weird, out of 14.
But her sister left the night before, so she slept alone with four kids.
Yeah.
And you notice that Fred is not mentioned. Fred would have been 5 or 6 months old. The theory is that so some people have cast aspersions on her story from that, but other people say, well, they may have just, he was a very, you know, they're leaving two kids who are old enough to be sort of independent.
Correct. Yeah.
You want the kid with the two twins that need diaper changes, we don't care about. So we have one kid who's a little more difficult.
Yeah.
They left him with, they had family in the area.
Yeah, so. Fred could have been with her mother or his mother. Or,
exactly.
That's not that weird.
Oh, yeah.
We know Fred survived.
Yes.
So she said when the parents got home, she said that Gilbert didn't really talk to her at all, but Marie was furious.
For her having interceded with the twins.
Because she said, you know, I cleaned up the twins and all that kind of stuff. And she said Marie smelled, she said they both smelled like alcohol.
Yeah. Wow.
And Marie was furious. When she went
furious at her for
taking care of her children.
Yeah. Something she had never done in her life.
Yes. And Susan said it broke her heart. And she knew at 14, these kids were abused, neglected and abused. She told her mother, and like, what are we going to do about this? Her mother told her it was none of her business.
I don't know that if he was a sheriff's deputy at this point or not, but I wonder if Gilbert had a thuggish, mess with him kind of a reputation.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
But she said...
And she lived in the same area, the same neighborhood, the same, almost not a complex. I think there were small, detached, very small detached homes, like affordable housing at the time, is my understanding. So they lived very nearby.
Yeah, she was
her
neighbor.
Mom was probably afraid of Gilbert.
Probably. She said she didn't know what to do, but she felt horribly guilty her entire life, and she'd always wondered what happened to them.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, beyond relieved that he survived. She had no idea what happened to Jill. She never saw them again after that.
Another implication, or which also implies that they were taken away very soon after this happened. They probably thought, okay, she's going to blab. We got to do something about these two twins ASAP.
That's my theory. Yeah. That's what Marie thought. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, so that's kind of the end of it.
The Atlantic City side. Have they verified even by DNA that he for sure is...
With the first cousin.
Jack. Yes.
Yes.
So he is Jack Rosenthal. Yeah. So Paul Fronczak was actually born Jack Rosenthal. And he, for some reason, was put in a nice outfit and put it in a stroller in front of a nice department store in Newark to be... presumably by someone who wanted to make sure he was taken care of to some extent.
And Jill, they never know by who.
You never know by who.
Nope.
Are you going to talk more about what you think of what happened to him and Jill? Or are you done with that?
No, I mean, I think what kind of everybody thinks is, you know, this could have been the inciting incident. Susan babysitting.
That's what I suspect.
And
I
kind of suspect Marie more than Gilbert, even. You know, she flies into a rage. You know, we might get in trouble. So as horrible as it is to think that your mother killed your sister and abandon you. Maybe it was her. Maybe it was Gilbert. Another cousin of Gilbert's named Toby met with Paul. And she said that in their childhood, she had grown up with Gilbert, that he was a nice, normal boy. She had happy childhood memories of, you know, doing fun things with him.
With Gilbert, his father.
With Gilbert, his father. And when he came back from Korea, he was a different person.
Huh.
He wasn't nice. He was shell-shocked and completely different. So I don't know, but I think Jill was killed accidentally or on purpose, just, you know, out of abuse.
It'd be more likely that accidentally, just because why not kill them both? That makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to kill Jill intentionally, you'd almost certainly kill Jack. So that implies that she was killed accidentally.
Yeah. No, not a true accident. I mean, you're neglectful and abusive. That's what I mean.
Neglectfully killed.
Yeah.
But another alternative is that she was given away to someone. or someone in the family interceded. Because just the fact, I feel like this is biased, but I think Marie would have just, you know, dumped him in a dumpster or at an orphanage. But this person, the person who did leave Jack anyway, seemed to have gone out of their way to make sure he was left somewhere that where he'd be
found.
Relatively well taken care of. But it just doesn't sound like Gilbert or Marie.
Yeah.
It doesn't at all. I mean, these are the people who left them both in this, you know,
so
dark
hellhole.
Did
it? If it was Leonard, he doesn't remember?
Not Leonard.
Or he just...
It could have been her mom. Remember, they never talked about it. And it could have been her mom, his mom, who knows? Someone else did that. I do think Jill was probably killed, because if Jill had been, even separately, like, oh, let's leave them in separate places, he would have heard about Jill, would have been found as well, even if it was found at an orphanage or something
and
like that.
And you're right, it makes sense that they would leave them someplace separately, because you don't want twins to be found.
Yeah,
because
it'd be indicative. So if you find two different kids,
and
they could have gone 2 hours away. They could have gone and left Jill, I don't know, in New York or Philadelphia or something like that. So one's left in Newark, one's left in Philadelphia. Maybe that we don't know. Maybe there was a girl, little girl found in Philadelphia or somewhere nearby who was adopted and just never made the press. And
and nobody ever talked about, did they go through family, you know, little girls found at the time? I imagine they would have, but it wasn't talked about.
But would there have been any, I mean,
you'd have to go to a whole bunch of different cities.
For some reason, he did. They could have, for whatever reason, the little girl who was found in, again, Philadelphia, D.C., who knows? Somewhere probably fairly close.
Yeah.
Because Newark is only, what, 2 or 3 hours away from Atlantic City. So they could have just kept driving and dropped off Jill in New York or Boston, or they could have gone separately. Yeah. Who knows? But my suspicion is that someone else did it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was her mother, because remember, her mother saw Leonard's wife, and they both said, "Oh, I thought you had the twins." No, I thought you know.
Okay.
So unless she was lying,
like,
but
she could have been lying, or someone like almost like a guardian angel, like, you know, taking them away. Let me take care of it. You guys are out of it. Yeah. I'll take care of this. And that was that person's solution was to leave at least Paul.
And also, it's 1965. Mm-hmm. If you take them straight to the police, they might just be returned to the parents.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. Things were different back then. So that part is still a mystery. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have Jill as an open missing person case. Mm-hmm. And there is an age progressed picture of her, which is weird because there are not pictures of them as babies.
Oh, okay.
So... Well. They just kind of surmise, maybe based on how Paul looks. I'm not sure.
Probably
how they did it.
It's a wild guess. It's an educated guess.
Yes. So now
back to Paul Fronczak.
Back to where is the real Paul Fronczak? This story is a little bit less dramatic, but it's January 2019. And someone writes in a tip to Paul's Facebook page, which he gets a lot of these all the time. But this tip says, "This is the baby you're looking for." And it's a woman named Julie from Michigan. And she says she did an ancestry DNA test just for fun. Mm-hmm. And she matched with David Fronczak.
Yeah, okay.
Paul's brother.
Paul's
adoptive brother.
Not real brother, Or not so biological brother.
This meant that her father could possibly be the real Paul Fronczak. She hadn't told her father yet. He was a really private person, and he didn't do a DNA test. Only she did. But it turned out he was Paul Fronczak.
So they did what she had. They did her DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can tell by, they're called centimorgans, like the number of centimorgans of your DNA that match with the person. So, and it'll tell you what your suspected relationship is based on the number of centimorgans.
She didn't get any of her dad's DNA somehow and have that tested?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. But
like Paul did?
No, but it's that close of a match, you know, based on other information. It's very sure.
Okay.
So his name was Kevin Beatty.
Kevin Beatty.
His mother's name was Lorraine. She was born in, her name was Lorraine Fountain, I believe. She was born in 1921. She was raised in Chicago.
Hmm.
Interestingly enough.
Yeah.
And she got married at 19. This was in 1940 and had two kids. She got divorced in 1951. And it seems like she, when she got a divorce, she's the one that left the family.
Okay.
And in 1964, she's in her early 40s. So this is the year that the Fronczak baby was
kidnapped.
She's dating a doctor. And at this time, she abruptly leaves Chicago and moves to Arkansas.
Intriguing. Just after the kidnapping of little Paul Fronczak.
And she has a baby boy with her when she arrives in Arkansas. She says his name is Kevin Beatty. Never telling anybody who the father is, where he gets this last name from, Beatty. But she tells everybody that he's her son. And 5 years after this, she returns to Chicago with now 5-year-old Kevin. And she has older kids now. And she basically just says, this is your brother.
Those are from her previous marriage?
Yeah.
Okay.
They had no idea. They had never.
Were they in any contact with her in Arkansas?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not really sure.
How old were they? I mean, she said 41, so they would have, so this is now 1970. Oh, okay. So.
She got married in 1940 and got divorced in 51. So
she could have had them in the early mid-40s, something like that.
She probably had them in the early 40s, I'm guessing.
So by the 60s, they're already
adults.
Grown up.
They're, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So she remarries again after moving back to Chicago, and everybody said she was an angry person. She was not a nice mother, that Kevin was afraid of her. She was, I think she was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And so it just, you know.
So the obvious, okay, obviously, clearly you're implying that Lorraine Beatty kidnapped
Paul
Fronczak. She had knowledge of hospitals. She had probably, you know, she could have had access. Some people could have, you know, recognized her if she had met her doctor boyfriend there at times.
Yeah.
She had, but obviously the motivation is, why does she want a child when she doesn't seem like she really wants a child?
Exactly. And she's in her 40s. It's not
You done, you had your thing. You raised a couple of kids.
Well, she didn't raise a couple kids, really.
I guess not.
Well, maybe she, I mean, they could have been, you know, 6, 7, 8, something like that. Yeah. But that's not, you know.
So she, you abandoned other kids. Why do you want kids? Was it, I mean, not to psychoanalyze her at this late date, but did she just feel such guilt for having, she wanted to almost make amends by raising a child right, but she didn't because she was not a good child raiser.
Yeah. So Kevin gets married and he has 3 daughters. Mm-hmm. He also has a drinking problem. He also gets divorced. And they never know if Lorraine is the kidnapper or not. She dies in 2004. And Kevin had no idea she was not his biological mother. He didn't find that out until 2019.
Wow.
So after his daughter contacts Paul and, you know, he probably goes through CC Moore to say, hey, can you look at this DNA match and that kind of stuff. Then she does tell her dad.
Okay.
But he does not want to be...
Because his obvious thing would be to meet his actual real biological parents, who he's never known.
Which he's fine with that, but he doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be a public person. Okay. He doesn't want it announced and all that kind of stuff. So his, hang on a second.
He'd be 55 years old around if he's born in 64.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, his daughter said they were afraid to tell him at first. But like I said, he had no knowledge of it. Mm-mm. So everybody thinks, based on pictures, that Lorraine does not look like the kidnapper.
She doesn't
match the composite picture of the description of the nurse.
It's the composite picture from 1964 technology. The composite pictures are still pretty trash, but
I think
against her is. I think, didn't they say something I read that said that they described the nurse as being shorter or taller than Lorraine, the fake nurse who kidnapped as being, I can't remember. Do you remember?
Something like that.
Shorter, taller. Yeah. Like, okay, so you were a few inches off your estimate of the person's height, who you saw for a fleeting second.
Yes.
The people who saw her, she's like, what are you doing here? Or her mom, Paul's mom, would have been lying down in bed, fresh with a baby on her.
So. And the cab driver.
It's ridiculous. The cab driver. These are all the people that. Down, so that's silly. I don't know. To me, there's zero question Lorraine Beatty kidnapped Paul Fallon.
I think it was her, too. I mean, people said that she might have had a connection to some mob kidnapping ring and stuff like that. Yeah. It's very silly.
I did read that as well. It's like some guy came forward and said, she was kidnapping kids for a mob kidnapping ring.
Yeah.
The heat came down about this case in particular, so she had to keep it and move to Arkansas. That's the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's just some asshole looking for attention.
So Dora is obviously told by Paul, we found your real son. And she repeatedly...
What about Swipey? Did anybody tell Swipey about this? Or did anyone tell... I'm desperately trying to think of the other character that I can't think of the other character in that.
No. Oh, she has a monkey.
Monkey. The monkey. What's the monkey's name?
I don't know.
Is this a tangent?
Yes.
Okay.
So Dora didn't want to do interviews regarding... finding her real child. Her husband has died. Chester died.
Okay.
And
this is now 2019.
2019.
Okay. Still.
So she does talk to Kevin Beatty, her real son, in December of 2019. And then they spoke twice again in early 2020. And Paul is apparently there with Dora, with his little girl, Emma. And they're like, trying to eavesdrop. Emma's in middle school by this point, and they're like kind of eavesdropping on grandma's conversation with her real child. And, you know, she did, you know, it was a nice conversation. She asked him what kind of life he'd had, and it seemed like she was doing most of the talking. They had made plans to meet, and in April of 2020, like super quick, he was diagnosed with cancer. He had a lot of brain tumors, and he died.
Oh, my God.
So he died in April of 2020.
Before they could meet in person.
Yeah, they never met in person.
That's too bad.
And, you know, I watched a documentary. I think it was a CNN documentary called The Lost Sons, And it's a good one. I would go watch it if you're interested in this story at all, because you get to see everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's some real nice stuff at the end with Dora and Paul kind of, you know, coming together. And it's kind of nice. She looks really good for her age.
She'd be what, late 70s?
Yeah, I think. I couldn't find a year that it was made, so I don't know exactly when it was made.
Well, after 2020.
Yeah. And nothing says if she like has a relationship with Kevin's daughters. He had three daughters.
That's right.
They did.
God, yeah. She's their grandmother.
Yeah. They wanted to continue respecting their father's wishes to remain kind of private and anonymous. So, like, you see them, but you see them from the back. They don't show their faces or their names or anything like that. Yeah. So,
but it's not, it's not their fault. You can see, I mean, it's Lorraine Beatty's.
Yeah.
Lorraine Beatty was the one who did the wrong and terrible thing. No one else had any responsibility or culpability in that whatsoever.
And I'm assuming they didn't have a, you know, super close grandmotherly relationship with her, because I don't know exactly when they were born, but she died in 2004. Okay. So
they may not have ever
known her.
And she was not a nice person.
No, she wasn't a nice person. Mm-mm.
She sounds like a kidnapper.
She does sound like a kidnapper.
Because she was.
Yes. I believe she was the kidnapper.
Yeah, you can't. It's an inescapable conclusion that she did it.
Yeah. But I don't understand the motivation to raise this child that you clearly don't care all that much about.
I know it. And God, it really is this whole tale, this saga of misplacement, of these kids being misplaced from where they ought to have been. And it seems like really, honestly, horribly, none of them had great lives. Kevin doesn't sound like he was well raised.
No.
All love to Chester and Dora. All respect to Chester and Dora, but it doesn't sound like Paul was well raised.
You know,
either.
The super nice little thing in the documentary with Paul and his mom, he thanks her and he says he's grateful and he loves her. And, you know, he thought that he was happy with his family. But
yeah, you read between the lines, and it doesn't seem like... I mean, yet you have a tragic
child,
and it certainly was better than being raised by...
His biological
Gilbert
family,
and
yes.
Claire, who are Marie, who are monsters.
I mean, you and I disagree with some of the things that Dora and Chester did, but
Yeah, they don't sound like terrible people.
They're not terrible people. They just weren't super lovey-dovey, yeah, you know, those kind of parents. They were good parents. And it just, ideally, his best life would have been if he was adopted by the Eckerds,
yeah,
I think.
That's another story. It's almost the misplacement of him, you know, being not living his best life, which would have not been with his biological family.
Yeah.
We think. We're just surmising.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, that is quite the saga, mm-hmm, of Paul Fronczak.
Yeah. And I don't know, there's no word like, okay, so is the possible murder of baby Jill an open case? It doesn't seem like it really is.
Really? She's still a missing person, not a murderer, because they don't know if she's alive or dead for sure.
And there's no talk of like the Atlantic City police having any sort of case. And I guess it's, you know, they're
the
never going
to. Because the perpetrators
would all be dead.
Would be dead.
Most likely.
And we effectively know who they are.
Yeah. And they're never going to find a body. And so what's the point?
If she was murdered, we know who they are. If she was killed even accidentally, we know who they were.
But so Paul really, he ends up with, I would say, a strained relationship with his brother. His brother is in the documentary for a very brief moment. Mm-hmm. He kind of regrets the way he reacted, you know, with the news from Paul and not being helpful at the time and all that kind of stuff. He wished he had been a nicer brother, but that's kind of it. It just seems like they don't really have a close relationship. Linda and Fred are not interested in having a relationship with him, but he did meet some cousins and
No, it's an amazing story for Paul, and it was an amazing adventure for him. Did he stay married?
No.
He didn't.
They
because
did
he was
get
sort
a
of
divorce.
Driving away his wife with his obsession.
Yeah. And he acknowledges that. He takes responsibility kind of for ruining their marriage.
That's too bad.
Yeah. She, however, is in the documentary.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Story,
it's
Carrie.
A saga.
It is a three-part saga.
Unusual
no
for
less.
Me.
It is unusual for you. Not for me. My next one's going to be a three-parter as well. I think you'll enjoy it. Not quite as uplifting of an end. All of yours was kind of a quasi-uplifting ending.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Until next time, thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.